Rob Mann very recently, and it's very related to the talk that Oscar gave a couple of days ago, because it has to do with hairy black holes with one killing field. But how it historically worked is that it was done in five dimensions, and then me and some collaborators redid it, extended it to higher dimensions, and then now afterwards we went and said, what's the simplest case? So that's what I'm going to be talking about today. And there's evidence of a mass gap for these things. So if you're in the mass gap, then you can't have these hairy black holes. Okay, so the outline is I'll just give some motivation and review the very basics of the BTZ black hole that I'm going to be using. Then I'll talk about, very quickly, perturbative boson stars. And we constructed them around ADS3, as well as the conical singularities in the mass gap. The result that there's no perturbative hairy black holes, and some new analytic evidence for finite-sized hairy black holes, and finally, some future prospects. Okay, so the motivation, as Oscar said before, was super radiance. So the idea is if you send in some mode, then it can scatter off the horizon and increase its amplitude. But if you're in ADS, then it acts like a confining box. So it gets reflected back towards the horizon, and then it can increase its amplitude again and just slosh back and forth, and that leads to an instability. And superradiance occurs if this condition here is satisfied. So then that leads one to believe that there is this end state where you have this lump of scalar field that's co-rotating with the black hole. And so that's just this sort of diagram here, where the gray stuff is just this scalar field that's going around and around. Yeah.
The BTZ black hole always behaves as a large black hole, so it doesn't have the super radiance, right?
Right, but we're finding that we actually can have hairy black holes if the black hole is big enough.
If it is big enough,
yeah.
And it is associated with the onset of superradiance?
We haven't verified that that's true, but we are finding that there is
no superradiance.
Yeah, so maybe if the scalar field, the amplitude is big enough, so finite size perturbation sending in or something.
Can you understand the mechanism?
At this point, we don't understand it well enough.
Or said in other words, is this new branch connected to the BTZ?
We don't know yet because we haven't constructed the numerical results in full. So I don't think that you can continuously send the amplitude of the scalar field to zero. So in that sense, it probably isn't connected fully to the branch of BTZ. Okay, so just some basics of the BTZ. The place with conical singularities here is referred to as the mass gap, because for the BTZ metric, it's given by this. So ADS3 is just with j equals 0 and m equals minus 1. So the geometry is smooth, and anywhere between m equals minus 1 and m equals 0, you get these conical singularities. And then m equals 0 is sort of this trumpet-shaped background, and then black holes can exist beyond that. So the trumpet-shaped background is really what makes all the difference with these things. So to look for these solutions, we use the following ansatz. So it's just Einstein with negative cosmological constant, and it's coupled to a massless scalar field. So to connect it to the BTZ black holes, we use the metric ansatz, and the scalar field ansatz is just like this, so it's just some harmonic scalar field whirling around. And the key is that the stress tensor of the matter field shares the symmetries of the metric, even though the actual scalar field itself doesn't. So the scalar field itself is only invariant under the single killing field, whereas the metric has dt and dphi as killing fields. So black holes with the scalar field around it will be invariant under a single killing field. No, and here we have to have a singlet. Yeah. And that's essentially because you only have one plane of rotation.
the question is, the doublet was really important to eliminate the theta dependence, but here you are in 2 plus 1 dimensions.
Right.
the energy momentum tensor.
And if you go to 7 dimensions, you need a triplet, and 9 you need it. Yeah, so. Okay, so the equations of motion resulting are just a couple or a couple system of second order ODEs, as well as some constraint equations. Not going to get tested on those afterwards.
So, but your pi is complex. So the way it thinks is simple.
Sorry?
Go back one transparency.
Yes.
Okay, so third formula.
Yeah.
If pi is a real field, can you explain that?
No. It's complex. He's talking about a doublet.
Sorry.
Before, it was two complex.
Yeah, there's two complex fields. Here, there's only one. Yeah.
But this is really like a boson star.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can construct boson stars. Yeah.
I see.
So equations of motion are there. So before constructing solutions, which, you know, I'll construct boson stars and then show that there's no small perturbative hairy black holes. We have to talk about boundary conditions. So asymptotically, they should all the solutions should approach BTZ. And for the scalar field, for it to be normalizable, it has to have a fall off of 1 over r squared. And epsilon just measures the strength of the scalar field. So we're assuming that it's a low strength scalar field. So for boson stars, then we're constructing them around ADS3 as well as these conical singularities. So if I just say that the mass is negative 1 over mu squared, then ADS3 would just be mu equals 1. And then we find that the scalar field has to vanish at the origin, and alpha is just some number greater than 1. So for ADS3, alpha equals 1, and then below that, it's less than 1. But near the black hole horizon, F has a simple 0, and then the other metric functions as well as the scalar field are finite. And a condition imposed by the equations of motion are that the angular velocity of the horizon is equal to the scalar field frequency. So just a general idea of how to construct these perturbative solutions. You start by expanding your fields in powers of the scalar field condensate parameter and the horizon size. So since there's no small hairy black holes, forget about the horizon size. So to construct the boson stars, you just do it in the scalar field condensate parameter. And then the bootstrapping procedure is you start with just pure ADS, or the conical singularity. And then you add some non-trivial scalar field at order epsilon. And then you back react on the metric to solve for order epsilon squared corrections to the equations of motion. Then you go to epsilon cubed, and so on. So you can just go back and forth like this as much as you want. And one consequence of this is that you have to also expand the scalar field, the frequency. Okay, so for boson stars, we can construct these around ADS3 in conical singularities in the mass gap, and we showed that explicitly in our paper. We can't construct it around the zero mass BTZ background, and the reason for that is really due to this trumpet shape. So if you have some incoming scalar field, then the volume of space-time is exponentially shrinking as you're going down the trumpet. So at some point, you have some finite amount of energy going down this trumpet that's exponentially shrinking, and so you form a horizon. Oh yeah, there's also, like I said, no perturbative hairy black holes. So the general procedure to try and find these in the first place is to split up your space-time into two regions and then solve in those two regions and match them in the middle. But there's a problem when you try to do that for these things. So asymptotically, the solution looks like this. And near the horizon, the solution looks like that over there, where k1 is this modified Bessel function. So when you look in the matching region, you take the small r limit of the asymptotic solution, and then the large r limit of the near horizon solution, and you match those. But then you find something like this, and that requires that both C1 and C2 are 0, which means that the scalar field just vanishes.
This is a generic statement. I could have a PDE where my asymptotic solution would behave in a way that it couldn't be matching with what I have near horizon limit, but that's because I have something in between that is very different. So they don't have to...
Yeah, I wouldn't believe it either if this was the only thing there, but I have a couple lines of evidence that show that it actually is something spurious going on. So one thing to look at to see if what's going on is actually true is the effective potential. So if you look at null rays in these backgrounds, then at the top we have the effective potential, where M and J are the parameters for the BTZ black hole, and E and L are the energy and angular momentum of the null ray. So they're the conserved quantities along the geodesic. So a particular feature of 2 plus 1 gravity is that in the effective potential, the gravitational attraction to the black hole enters at the same power of R as the centrifugal repulsion. So that means that they can actually exactly balance, or one will win out over the other. So in the small black holes that we were looking at, it was always a line like this. So the scalar field was always just getting eaten by the horizon. So if you can get centrifugal repulsion to win, then you can actually support scalar hair, because you can have this barrier that the field can bounce off.
But just common, this was known, right? I mean, the stability, the linear stability of the rotating BTZ solution is well established. Yeah.
Okay, so in order to see that there actually are these black holes of finite size with scalar field, you can look at the near horizon expansion of the field. So the capital F is just all the metric functions. So if we expand those just in powers of R minus the horizon radius, then we can just choose what our independent parameters are. So we have the amount of scalar field is basically the scalar field at the horizon. Then we have a mass, something that corresponds to mass, another thing that corresponds to angular momentum. So everything else is determined in terms of either matching by the shooting method or things like that. So what we find from the near horizon expansion is that the scalar field identically vanishes if the scalar field vanishes at the horizon. And that's actually exactly what was happening in the previous case, because that modified Bessel function goes to zero at the horizon. Furthermore, the existence of a black hole horizon is constrained by the sine of F1. So you have F1 times R minus R0, so that's there's no F0 term, because F has a simple hole. So if F1 is negative, then you can't have a black hole horizon. So here is a plot of F1. So this is just for sort of indicative or representative parameters from the, sorry, I forgot to rewrite it. It's just representative parameters from here. G naught will be fixed if you do the shooting method and match them in between. So this is showing that if you're below a certain point, this is for fixed scalar field at the horizon too. So if you're below a certain point, then you can no longer support scalar hair because F1 is negative. So you don't actually have a black hole anymore. So this is what I'm referring to as the mass gap. Whereas if F1 is positive, then you can actually have this black hole.
This depends on G0.
Yeah.
But G0 you don't know. So you're saying for any value of G0 there's a mass gap?
Yeah. Yeah, you can do this for, you can actually make plots like this for any kind of G or G0.
Are you going to show us a plot like this, but with energy as a function of the angular momentum?
No, this is the only plot that I
probably this is a good opportunity to show something. I guess that what is happening here is that in the five-dimensional case that I discussed on the other day, for small angular momentum, the airy black holes that were present there and that you don't find here were connected with the Myers-Perry family. So
right,
in this case,
right.
It would be BTZ precisely at the onset of
right.
the instability curve.
Right.
Now, the BTZ doesn't have superradiant instability.
Yeah, no.
So you should not expect this small angular momentum airy black hole to exist because you don't have this connection.
Right,
to the
and
instability curve.
That's
however,
exactly, yeah.
In five dimensions, what we also find is that above a critical angular momentum, There are airy black holes that are not connected to the Myers-Perry family, meaning that, in particular, their entropy is smaller than the entropy of the Myers-Perry black hole.
Okay.
So the phase transition is first order instead of being second order.
Right.
So
that that's something to check here.
For
yeah.
large angular momentum, you have these air black holes that have no connection, never joined the BTZ family.
Right. Right. And that's likely what's going on, because if you decrease the scalar field, this is going closer and closer there, but there's no way to make it so that it goes to zero.
Basically, you say
yeah.
that's what we think.
Yeah, that's what we think is happening.
What you
yeah.
say is that's what we think is happening.
Yeah, yeah. So I agree with you. but as it stands, it looks like this is the allowed window for having these hairy black holes. So some in progress and future directions. So we're going to search for boson stars numerically, and we expect similar to results to 5D and higher, at least in the perturbative regime. Or sorry, we don't have numerical results for higher dimensions yet, but we might be looking for those. So. But we expect results very similar. And also searching for these hairy black holes numerically. And for reasons that were discussed already, we expect very different results. Another thing to look at is what is the effect of the mode number m? So we had e to the negative I omega t plus m phi. So what's the dependence of this black hole existence window on that? And in the future, actually, yeah, that already is corroborating evidence. And ultimately, what do these things correspond to in the dual CFT?